of the Buzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 65 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Sharon Taylor, CEO of OmniStudio here in Melbourne, Australia. OmniStudio is a podcasting host that provides an all-in-one solution for on-demand audio to help content producers like me focus on producing great content and growing their audience. I will state up front that I am a client of OmniStudio and it is a great service, so I'm really excited to be speaking with Sharon today. We talked about the power of podcasting, the interface for a manager between technology and people, and the exciting things that are in store for both podcasting and for OmniStudio. Sharon is very passionate about both her business and her team, and that passion certainly shines through in the interview. So, without further ado, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Sharon Taylor. Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me today on this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast from Melbourne in Australia, just up the road from me, Sharon Taylor, the CEO of OmniStudio. Now, OmniStudio is an all-in-one on-demand audio management solution that helps content creators grow their audience and reduce production cost and monetize. Now, of course, it's a software as a service. It enables radio stations and podcasters to focus on doing what they do best, which is producing the high-quality content for their listeners. And I have to say up front that I'm an OmniStudio customer. I have been for a few months now, and I'm absolutely loving the service. So I can vouch for that. So I'm really looking forward to this interview and learning more. So welcome, Sharon. It's a great privilege to have you on the InnovaBuzz podcast.
Thanks, Jürgen. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
All right. So before we talk about podcasting and audio content and technology, let's find out a little bit about you. So what were some of the key milestones on your journey to becoming CEO of OmniStudio?
Oh, wow. Okay. It just kind of happened. I know that that's probably not the answer that most people want to hear. I've always worked in tech. Back in my very, very early years, I actually thought I was going to be a hotel magnate and was going to take over the world. From my early years of wanting to be, I suppose, I used to call myself a ball-breaking businesswoman when I was about 6 or 7 years old.
Great.
So yeah, you
very ambitious
that,
early on.
Yeah. And I think back then, I mean, one of my friends wanted to be a school bus, so I think that I aimed a little bit higher. She wanted to help the kids get to school. But I kind of fell out of that when I was about early 20s, and accidentally fell into a job working at an IT firm, and it just escalated from there. And so I spent about 8.5 years at a firm in Perth that did managed services and ran kind of like their web and their SaaS and IT divisions. Made the move across to Melbourne at the start of last year, took what was meant to be an 8-week contract, helping OmniStudio put some kind of operational controls in place. Mm-hmm. And one thing led to another, and I took the helm in April, and it's been a wild ride ever since.
Okay. So we'll learn a little bit more about OmniStudio in a moment, but I guess, you know, I wanted to ask this because I've been following a lot of stuff with Michael Gerber and various other people that basically come back to first principles, and one of the fundamental questions there is, why do you do what you do?
What else would you do if you don't do what it is that you do? I do what I do because I genuinely love business and I love tech, and I think that there is not enough, there hasn't in the past been enough intersect between the human aspect of technology and people, and I want to help, I suppose, bridge that. And so I do what I do because the people that I get to work with are brilliant geniuses, and I want to be a part of, I suppose, something exciting on a daily basis.
That's great. I love what you said there about, you know, the intersection between tech and human. And I think one of the things I always find puzzling, I guess, is the right word. You know, people get online and they publish things on blogs and they do various things online, and they think it's completely different to real life, if you like, physical life. But it's not. It's really about building relationships with people, isn't it?
It's true, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that think that a lot of problems, and a lot of problems can be solved with technology, but at the end of the day, there's still people that are building it and there's still people that are using it, and you need to take that into account.
Yeah, that's right. So tell us a little bit more about Omni Studio then.
Okay, so Omni Studio is the brainchild of a couple of pretty incredible guys who I get to work with on a daily basis, Long Zeng and Andrew Armstrong. It started out as a consumer play, actually. So I don't know if any of your listeners ever had our old school Omni radio app, but essentially Long wanted to build a personalised radio service. So he wanted to be able to, on the way into work, whether that's, you know, on his device or in his car, wanted to get a tailored audio stream, I suppose, that, you know, played his best music, you know, read out his calendar reminders from Facebook or from, you know, his Outlook calendar, and also married spoken word content together. Mm-hmm. And he basically wanted these little beautiful bite-sized clips or bits of information that in 20 minutes he can set his day up in the best way possible. So we fired that up, I suppose, 4 years ago now. The guys had a bit of a text-to-speech software that they created as well called SoundGecko, and they used that in the back end of Omni Radio, used some fancy algorithms and took it to market and got really quite a good lot of traction. And we took it to Southern Cross Austereo, I suppose, in the early days, is the biggest player in terms of where our pivot came from. Mm-hmm. We took it to SDA and said, you've got great content, you've got wonderful podcasts, can we, you know, put the content into Omni Radio? But at the time, you know, podcasts were, you know, 2 hours long. It was just a continual stream. And we found that there wasn't enough bite-sized content. There just wasn't to make this perfect consumer play that Long had envisioned work. So SEA said, this sounds great, we'd love to do that, but we have no way of actually getting our content from air to online. And so the guys sat down and had a bit of a brainstorm with everyone, and Omni Studio was born. So Omni Studio was the B2B play that we put together in terms of helping move radio stations from on air to online in seconds. So Andrew and the guys built a bit of proprietary technology that captures the live stream coming out of radio. And this is something that no one else in the world has. So we basically record everything and create an archive for the radio networks. And then they're able to go in and using our kind of tools that you'd be used to, Jürgen, is chop and change and edit and add mid-roll ad markers, and then basically clip it and put it into their podcast or social media sharing. And so it was really Omni Studio was born out of radio with a long-term ideal of helping build up the content for Omni Radio, the consumer app. And what we fell into while we were building this program for radio is that it was actually a very, very powerful CMS for podcast hosts as well. So people like yourself that are looking for, I suppose, more of an enterprise tool set come across to Omni Radio when they're ready to take their podcast to the next level. So that was, gosh, when did we do that? We built the better, the... What do we do? About 6 weeks it took us to launch the first version. And then that was in March 2015. And we're about 2 years, almost 2 years strong now with Omni Studio, the platform.
Mm. Yeah, and it really is a great platform. I mean, I moved over to Omni Studio probably in September. Sort of maybe August or so, I started playing around with it. In September, I moved the whole podcast over and even brought over all the old episodes because it not only all the tools that you mentioned, but also the whole analytics is just so easy to access compared to what I was using before. And it really does make it very easy for people to actually set up a podcast very quickly, provided they have the equipment, of course, the hardware to run a podcast.
Correct, yeah. We don't do the recording of the podcasts ourselves. We do for, obviously, radio that have our tool set in their studios. But otherwise, as soon as you upload it, yeah, we'd like to think that we have probably the best and, like, most enterprise-level set of tools out there, and especially proud of the analytics, which gives a kind of granular insight into how listeners are interacting with your podcast.
That's right. Yeah. And I was quite surprised. I found out some new things that I didn't realize before where people were that were listening to the podcast. So it is quite enlightening, the level of granularity that the analytics that you have going to.
Yeah, we're proud of it. I mean, it's one of the biggest problems in podcasting at the moment is that data and the measurement. So it's one of the things we're working to fix.
Now, of course, you've got some quite high profile clients, leading content producers in various fields that are on the podcast, right? You mentioned radio and there's some TV, I think, as well, that obviously have come across to podcasting as a result also of your involvement, if you like, and also a lot of prominent podcasters.
Yeah, correct. We were lucky in the early days that we had an amazing network of advisors, and we made some pretty good hires in terms of you know, who they knew in the industry, and word spread pretty quickly. So yeah, we've got at the moment I think at one stage we had 70% of Australian iTunes top 100 podcasters in our platform. So we've been really lucky. And then obviously as radio grows, I mean, we look up to Southern Cross Austereo, Macquarie Media at the moment in Australia, and then, you know, all the way across the globe. So Singapore Press Holdings and, you know, Emmis in the States, Croc Media, Chorus in Canada. So we've got a pretty good footprint, and word is getting out, I suppose, that when you're ready to take things to the next level, you would come across to Omni. So yeah, it's interesting, and more, I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks we can announce a few more large names as well. So keep your eyes peeled for those.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us a little bit more about, you know, the power of podcasting, because I think, you know, this is a really growing thing, and a lot of people have, you know, been following the big podcasters that have been doing it for years and years and kind of take in the content and don't think of doing something themselves.
No, it's true. I mean, podcasting has been around for, gosh, over a decade now, and it was an accidental gift from Apple, almost just hiding that little purple button on someone's phone. It became, you know, popular overnight, didn't it? And then some say that it's gone through a second renaissance when Serial came out in 2006. Podcasting is amazing because it's the most personal form of audio that you will ever find. So right now your listeners feel like they've got a relationship with you because you're right there in their ears. You know, you're with them, and people almost feel like they're friends with the podcasting and the hosts. There's a level of trust and connection there which is kind of second to none. It's just phenomenal. I mean, there's research out at the moment. I know that, I mean, everyone's got mixed feelings about putting ads into things, but at the end of the day, advertising kind of does pay the bills for a lot of these content makers. And who was it? Edison Research just released some great figures that said that people are more likely to, 60% more likely, I think, to buy a product they heard advertised by a podcast host because that level of trust is just so high. So it's phenomenal. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting over the next 12 months as well, because at the moment nothing really quite beats that linear experience in the car of just turning your radio on. But audio on demand, like, I can pick what it is that I'm listening to on my phone, albeit, you know, I'm about, you know, 40 episodes behind my favourite podcast at the moment because it keeps getting in the way. But it's just a phenomenal platform for whatever message you're trying to get across, and so accessible as well. Like, anyone can fire it up at any point, right?
That's right. Yeah.
You don't have
to
have a huge budget or anything. I don't know how you got started, Jürgen, but it's relatively easy as a medium.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got encouraged to do it by one of my mentors, who I think is also a customer of yours, Troy Dean, He encouraged me to start my own podcast around innovation, and I did that and kind of worked out how to set it all up on the blog and all the bits and pieces. But I have to say that you know, going back, I wouldn't even remember how to do all the things that I did at the time, and if you were to set up with Omni Studio, it'd be so much easier. So I think, you know, that's one of the things I really like about Omni Studio, that it does make it really easy for somebody to set it up without a lot of technical know-how, as long as they've got the hardware to do the recordings and some recording software and a little bit of editing skill on the audio recording, or if they want to do video.
Correct. Yeah.
The rest of it's pretty easy. But yeah, I like what you said about the trust factor that it builds up. And I read the blog post you wrote recently about the advertising and all the stats there, which is quite fascinating. And I guess it's, so I've had people ask me about advertising on the podcast itself, and I've kind of been a bit hesitant about that, but I do my own advertising in the sense of I will recommend things that I believe in, so and that I use myself, and in a sense that's advertising, even though usually I don't get paid for it. But it's, you know, if you have a conversation with friends or business colleagues, you'll tell them, hey, I've had this great experience with this product. Why don't you try it for your needs? You know, I think it'll help you do whatever it is you do. So that's essentially what you do on the podcast. And if your audience, you know, if you have that level of trust, that certainly carries a lot of weight.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
All right. So in terms of your own sales process, you mentioned it's pretty much word of mouth. Is that what you do, or do you have any other structure in place?
It's interesting. So a lot of it is word of mouth for podcasting. For that kind of, I guess, longer tail of podcasters, it's mostly they just find us on forums or people are talking about us. Some online advertising for a little while was working really, really well for us. Mm-hmm. On the larger end of town, though, with the radio clients, it's really just about introductions. Yeah. And being around, we go to a lot of forums, a lot of conferences, mostly in the States, which I think is probably one of the hardest things about doing business as a startup from Australia, is that you're so far away from everyone. Yeah. You have to get on a plane and fly for, I think last year in October, my CTO and I got on a plane, flew for 20 hours to go to a 3-day conference and then flew back. And that was a whirlwind trip to the States. Those work the best for us. And then also firing up relationships. It's just partnerships, partnerships, partnerships. Mm. We're lucky that we have got a large amount of advocates, and kind of we fit a lot of holes, I suppose, in their marketplace. So it's just about finding those opportunities and leveraging them, really.
Hmm. Yeah, I hear what you say about the travel. It reminds me of my corporate life. I used to do stuff like that, but not for myself.
No.
Yeah.
Luckily, air travel has gotten a little, I find it bad when, you know, we're in, 2017 and people are still bemoaning air travel when it used to take 6 months to get anywhere by ship.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. We're soaring through the air majestically and we're complaining about the fact that it's a 2-hour delay.
Hmm. And actually the last trip I did on an aircraft, I spent the entire time when I didn't fall asleep listening to podcasts. So it's a good time to
Put a podcast. So, I mean, we've got a partnership with Qantas that basically puts a few of our more popular podcasts into their in-flight entertainment system as well, and I believe Virgin's
good,
the same.
Yeah.
So you don't even need to download them before you get on the plane anymore, depending, I suppose, on how niche your podcast preferences are.
Yeah. Well, I was actually lucky enough to have internet access in the aircraft at the time, so it was all pretty easy.
Oh, what a world we live in.
Yeah, exactly.
What a time to be alive, Jürgen.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I remember a time when, the first kind of, what were they? I don't know what sort of phones they were, but they were, in the back of the seat, you had to pay some exorbitant amount and everybody got really excited. Gee, you could phone home from the aircraft now, and people were doing it just for the novelty.
Yes, yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, what are some of the challenges you're facing then at Omni Studio?
I suppose the challenges that we face really are the same as everyone else faces. Like, I think that the problems that we come up against are just normal business problems. Sales speed, cycles of radio can be monolithic and glacial in pace at times. being, like I touched on before, I suppose if you are asking me more about the startup space, being in Australia and in podcasting where it's flourishing, but it's still about 3 or 4 years behind where the States is in terms of maturity as an industry. Like, we're still quite nascent in Australia.
Yeah.
That's probably the largest issue that we've got, and working tirelessly to kind of combat it. So, I mean, just the other day, one of our podcasts, Little Empire Podcasts, who do the worst idea of all time, they got an article written about them in the New Zealand Herald. And it's fantastic when you see this kind of mainstream media pick up an article about podcasts. And I suppose that's one of the biggest challenges, and what we're working most tirelessly on, is just to keep pushing the word out, because still only 50% of people know what podcasts are. And in order to bring that into a mainstream media market, it needs to be, you know, 75-80.
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting, because a lot of people listen to podcasts, but in terms of, you know, how do you access, well, people listen to them, but I mentioned my podcast to quite a few people that then say, well, how do I access it? You know, what do I do? So you're right. You know, it's not mainstream yet. People don't realize that if you've got a phone, mobile phone, if you've got a computer, you can listen to podcasts. In fact, I think some of the modern cars, you can actually directly listen to podcasts through the radio systems.
You can, yeah. So they're connecting CarPlay into a few models. And then you'll be able to, I'm not sure who the distribution channels are that are streaming at the moment. I have a feeling it's going to be iHeart and a couple of others. But it's going to become more and more prevalent. Realistically, once, and I know I keep touching on it, but as soon as the advertising money starts flowing strongly into the space, that's when you're going to see that it becomes truly mainstream.
Yeah. All right. So how big is Omni Studio now? How many people do you have working for you?
So we have, 8 people at the moment working for us. So it's still quite a small team, quite tight-knit, but we're very lucky at who we've hired in terms of, I suppose, knowledge of the industry and the speed at which they build. Oftentimes you can say to someone, oh, wouldn't it be great if it did X? And then on Monday you come in and they're like, oh, I built this prototype. What do you think of it?
Over the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, which is the most amazing thing. So, I mean, coming out of kind of small to medium, but still kind of a corporate IT background, to see the pace and the speed at which things can be done is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's the magic of small business, isn't it? You don't get things moving slowly like in the big corporates.
No, but you've got to balance that, I suppose. Just because you can build something fast and release something fast, the rest of the world is still moving at its own pace. And so you still have to fire up these partnerships with these large strategics or corporates, and they are entrenched in, you know, the speed that we've been able to break out of.
Yeah.
And then likewise with the consumer, and, you know, just because we move fast doesn't mean that people are going to buy it fast.
That's right. Yeah. That's frustrating sometimes, isn't it? Because I've got a situation at the moment where I've got a proposal out there for a large corporate, and why don't they decide?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, so how do you meet the challenge of growing so quickly as you probably have with this, and keep things kind of on track and keep things from, you know, keep the wheels from falling off?
Sure. It's probably two aspects. The first is, which is, I suppose, one of the questions that you asked in terms of what it is that makes me do what I do, and that's the people aspect. I'm a firm believer in being transparent and authentic with everyone that I come across. And I am an open book when it comes to what's happening with my team and, you know, our partners. And if you're just communicating regularly with everyone, you all move in the same direction, and the wheels tend to not fall off, which is the one thing I truly believe in. And the other is just to put trust in the people around you that are building the tools and the platform. So, I mean, I have nothing but faith in the dev team that we've got, and the applications and tools that they've put in place from a technical perspective in order to, I suppose, monitor things. Unfortunately, that does mean that they find all kinds of unique ways of being alerted to any problems that might happen at 2 o'clock in the night. there's a wonderful application called PagerDuty for anyone that works in dev. It basically calls you if any of your alerts go off. So a number of times our CTO in the early days got 2 o'clock phone calls waking him up to let him know that like a particular service, you know, had blipped just because of an internet hiccup.
Well, I guess that's one of the risks of a global business, right? If you've got something that's streaming live all the time and
something
stops working, you need to be able to address it.
Yeah,
I guess that's the benefit of having global teams down the track.
Correct. Yeah. Well, we're very lucky at the moment in the way that it's been built. So, I mean, I think at the moment we're hitting something ridiculous like 99.95% uptime. But yeah, as you scale, you've got to start thinking about that. And that's what we're thinking about this year, is because of the volume of customers that we're bringing on board now, you know, almost a mini pause on, okay, we need to stop building new features for the next month, and we need to make sure that our platform has the checks and balances to be able to handle this moving forward, because we deal with people's content. It's media and it's radio and it's podcasters that are trying to make a living by doing this, and we take that seriously. We can't stuff around.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any issue with people saying, well, you know, you're hosting the content, and how does the ownership sort of situation work?
Sure. We generally get asked that in the only first few minutes of meeting people. We've always been Switzerland in terms of this. There are those out there that want to control, I suppose, the host. And we firmly believe that the content belongs to the content owner. So if any time, Jürgen, you and I fall out of love as business colleagues, then your content is yours. We'll help you migrate off the system, and you can, you know, put it wherever you'd like. We purposefully don't put ads or try and do anything with your content that you don't want to have happen yourself. So we give publishers all the tools to do what they want with their content, and at the end of the day, it's theirs, and we are just the house that it lives in temporarily if they want it to be there.
That's a great model, I think, too. So you say something on your LinkedIn profile about understanding how the role of a visionary and an executor work hand in hand together. Tell us a little bit more about that, because that kind of fascinated me.
Sure. Well, I mean, I suppose I get asked it a few times every month in terms of moving, especially in the early days. I guess my background has always been ops. Like I'm HR, I'm finance, I'm, you know, operations. And then moving into that CEO role was a jolt to the system at first, because suddenly you're not just responsible for keeping a company ticking from the background. Like, you are the face of a company and you're setting the strategy. And so you have to know where the industry is going at any one point, whilst also understanding how, like, I mean, I can come out with any kind of weird and wonderful fanciful strategies, but if I don't have the business behind me to back it up, and I think that interlink is really important for me. I think it's been really beneficial to understand how those two roles work. At the moment, I am both CEO and COO, but hopefully in the coming months, once I've got someone to kind of pop into a COO role, I'll be able to lead them even better for it, because I'll understand how those two roles work hand in hand.
Okay, yeah. All right, so you've kind of got two hats on at the moment.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, this has been really fascinating. I really appreciate you being open and honest and transparent with us here. I think it might be time we moved on to The Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, and they're primarily innovators and leaders in their field, and get some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions that I'll ask, and hopefully we'll get some really insightful answers from you.
Okay, I promise nothing, but I'll do my best.
Okay. So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
This will probably be controversial, but
that's
like you
good.
Said, I'm
gets
open
attention.
And honest, to the point that I have no filter between my brain and my mouth sometimes. I think the number one thing people need to do to stop being so innovative is to stop trying to be innovative.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that people have started using innovation as the name of a product, and it's not. Innovation is a fantastic modern way of saying what people just should do as good business. Mm. It's finding better ways to do things. It's to find faster ways of doing things. It's, you know, to optimize for performance and speed without sacrificing, I guess, anything that's fundamental to your business. Mm. So I think the number one thing people need to do is don't worry so much about whether or what you're doing or not is innovative. If it feels right, do it. Like if it, you know, within reason, obviously legalities, etc. I'm not telling anyone out there to go and do anything untoward. But if it makes a part of your business even 5% better without sacrificing anything more than 0%, then that's innovation. I think that's what you should do.
That's fantastic. I love that. It's the first time somebody's actually given that answer, I think. But it really is a great answer. I do this talk on innovation, and in there I have this definition, and I say, you know, innovation can be incremental or it can be transformative, but it doesn't have to be. You know, the definition isn't that it's something that's, you know, totally out of this world that nobody's ever thought of before. Incremental improvement is also innovation. And so, you know, the idea of stop trying to look for that big breakthrough all the time is probably consistent with that.
Yeah.
All right. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas, new products?
New ideas and products. For me, it's about listening to the people that are around me that are smarter than I am. So be the best person that you know at surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you, better at you than almost everything, if not everything, and listen to the words that are coming out of their mouth. If someone on the coalface of what it is that you're doing in the industry and in your business every day is telling you that the number one gripe they've got is X and they think that Y would solve it, get people into a room. It doesn't have to be a long thing. Do stand-up meetings and just workshop it and try it and put trust in a team to roll something out. Because you're not going to be the one that comes up with everything. It's about the people that are around you, customers, partners, employees, peers, that are going to be the ones that more often than not come up with the good ideas.
Yeah, that's fabulous. I like that on so many levels. You know, you mentioned that, you know, surround yourself by really good people and, you know, even people smarter than you and defer to what they're telling you when you know that, you know, they've got good ideas, which is part of being, you know, open and transparent. And I love the ideas of stand-up meetings too.
Oh, yeah. I just, meetings are like being killed by a thousand tiny little paper cuts. You just want one huge, like, piano to fall out of the sky and hit you. So I'm a big believer in stand-up meetings. People's legs get tired. You talk about what you need to talk about for 5 minutes and then you're out of the room.
Get away. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. Mm. All right, so do you have a favourite tool or a system for improving productivity and allowing you to kind of focus on these other things we've talked about?
For me, I rely heavily, it's going to be horrible, but I rely heavily on email. My inbox is my to-do list and the rest of it I just kind of store in my mind. Productivity-wise, I mean, we've got a range of tools at Omni that we use. You know, Pipedrive is a great CRM, especially for startup-level businesses. You know, if you want to track goals, I'd take a look at Asana, which is great for keeping teams on track. For what I do in my day-to-day when I want to just have a quick glance at figures in terms of making quick decisions about what we're doing, you know, people like Bare Metrics and Visible Data, they do great stuff as well. So I think it's not one thing, but to have an array of things, not too many either. There's, you can die by you know, SaaS platform sometimes, can't you?
That's right, but, yeah. So what was that? Was it Bare Metrics, Bare?
Yeah, it's called Bare Metrics.
Okay, I missed that one. So we've got Pipedrive, Asana, Bare Metrics, and Visible Data. So we'll have links to all of those there so people can go and check them out.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, now Asana is one that we use all the time, so that's definitely great for tracking tools, but I know I've played with Pipedrive. That's a good one too, and the others I'll have to check out myself as well.
Now, Asana's great. There's another one called Lattice HQ, which is like a cut-down version of Asana. So if it's just, you know, quick glance, you know, KPIs and goals and those types of things, that's actually quite good as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We'll have links to that so people can check them out. Now, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track? And I think you might have already answered this one.
Yeah, I just communication. Yeah. Set the right expectations from the get-go. Do check-ins without being overwhelming to your staff and the clients. Like, you don't want to feel, I suppose, I never want to feel like I'm putting any onerous pressure or, you know, standing over anyone's shoulder. But you need to create an atmosphere where if something does go off track, people feel comfortable enough to come and tell you about it, you know, once it happens and once they've kind of given it a good crack at fixing it themselves. So for me, it just comes down to people and being open and having people feel that they can come and talk to you about it.
Oh, that's great advice. And yeah, I mean, setting expectations is really important, but you know, something that people often forget because they're in a rush to get into the details and the nitty gritty. And so they forget to set expectations and make sure everyone's on the same page right from the start, aren't they?
Correct. Yeah. Mm.
All right. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Oh, it's just got to be yourself, doesn't it? I think this is the trouble with where we are now, I suppose, as a community, especially in startup land. But I mean, you'd see it everywhere, is that now everyone expects you to have this personal brand.
Yeah.
And you have to be a thought leader, and you have to be, you know, a key person of influence. You just have to be yourself. You just have to be knowledgeable about what it is you're talking about. And if you don't know something, don't lie about it. But just, yeah, be I hate buzzwords, but just be authentic. Just be you, warts and all, and that's what you can do to differentiate yourself.
Yeah, and certainly that does differentiate yourself because there's nobody else like you.
No, it's true.
Yeah. And it comes back to your answer to the first question. You know, stop trying to be innovative. So stop trying to be somebody else. Stop focusing on differentiating yourself and just be yourself, because then you'll be different.
Yeah, and try and cut down on the buzzwords as too, everybody, like synergies and, you know, trajectories and all those types. Just use real words. That's probably how I would prefer the world to go.
Yes, I struggled with that in the corporate world, and I hope I've gotten rid of most of it.
I'm guilty of it myself as well.
All right, so what's the future for you and for Omni Studio then?
World domination. I think this year we're going to double down quite hard on the enterprise side of things. What will be next, I suppose, in terms of the next couple of months? We did a lot of work last year building out, I suppose, an incredible feature set, especially for kind of the podcasting side of things. Like, we built video, visualized audio, we release a lot of analytics. And this year it's going to be about refining the tool set that we've already got, and continuing to, I suppose, help publishers monetize. I mean, money's a huge one for the industry at the moment. This year, for 2017, I think everyone is going to be talking about that, and also the measurement as well. So we've got great analytics currently that run through our system. So we call it consumption analytics, and you can see, like, down to the second, drop-off, start, stop, skips. Probably Tuesday or Wednesday next week. Don't know when this actually is going to get released, Jürgen, but I might be giving people a sneak peek. We're officially going to launch consumption analytics for Apple iTunes podcasts. For people that are actually listening on their phones and streaming the podcasts, we're going to be able to represent about 30% of the data back to you as a, I guess, a content maker, to see how people are also interacting with your podcast live on their phones.
Oh, okay. That's fascinating. So you heard it first here on the Innova Buzz podcast. All right. Now, where do you see the podcast industry heading? I mean, you mentioned a little bit before, it's kind of perhaps slow progress until advertisers get on board, or until it's accepted that advertising needs to be part of this whole thing.
Yeah, I think that this year we're going to see, Nick Kwa put it the best. He's I'll use the term that I just said that I didn't want anyone ever to use, but he's a thought leader in our industry. And he references what he calls a stratification of podcasting layers this year. And I think that I firmly believe in that. I think that you're going to see and more meteoric rises of larger podcast networks. So I think Mamma Mia is going to do great things this year. I think that you're going to see more and more shows that people start talking about, like, you know, The Moth and people going on tour. So My Dad Wrote a Porno is coming to Australia to tour. That's that's phenomenal. That's amazing that podcasts are actually taking their shows on the road and able to sell out venues like they would a concert. So that's going to happen a lot this year. I think that whether we like it or not, measurement is going to become even higher on people's radars. I think that the only way that we're going to get money into the space from advertisers is they're going to expect and start demanding to see the same level of detail that they get from other audio sources.
Yeah.
Because that's a real grey area in podcasting at the moment. You know, what's a download, what's a listen? You know, you look at radio and people that are putting money into radio ads are able to go down to, they call it average quarter hours. So every 15 minutes, they know exactly how many people listened. And podcasting is going to be looked at in the same way. So I think this year is going to be a lot of high, like, scale advertisers wanting to get into the space, and a lot of measurement and a lot of a lot more excitement, I think, for podcasting. It's going to be a wild ride, actually. It's going to be a really good year.
Yeah. Do you see an interface between, you mentioned a little bit about live streaming before, an interface between podcasting and live streaming, so that, you know, an event, say, where a podcaster has a live audience on, that that's actually live streamed to people that can't physically make it there?
Oh, that would be fantastic. Well, at the moment, the shows that do go on tour technically record them and then release them, because there's still a little bit of post-production that I suppose needs to go into it. There's nothing stopping podcasters from, you know, Facebook Living or, you know, having an added element to their show. I suppose the question becomes, does it... I think, how will I answer this? If you ask me if I think people should, I think that good content is good content regardless of how it's delivered. I think that even though people are used to listening in their ears, the beauty of it is that they can go and do it anywhere, can't they? Like running, driving a car, etc. And video adds a different layer to that. Video is really engaging. Or it just depends. I'd hope so. I hope that someone continues to do something innovative in that area. But yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if we're going to actually see it. That's a great question. I'll actually look. I'm going to keep my eye out for that. I'll let you know if I come across it.
Okay. Yeah, it's something I've thought about, and I know that Zoom, so we're recording this with Zoom, and I know that they've just recently released an interface where you can live stream to Facebook from a Zoom webinar.
Oh, okay. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, that's right. That's really great, because before that, from a desktop to live stream to Facebook was actually a little bit cumbersome.
Yeah, it's the way the world is going, isn't it? Everyone wants everything now, 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 on demand, exactly when they want it. Don't want to wait for an episode to be uploaded.
So yeah,
I think that's
right.
Be interesting. I guess it just depends who wants to do what with their podcast. And that's the beauty of having the control over it. You can do whatever you want, whenever you want with it.
That's right, yeah. All right, well, this has been absolutely fascinating, Sharon, and I really appreciate your time. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field?
To be a leader in their field, just consume information. Talk to, again, I'll touch on it again, but talk as much as you can without being annoying to people that are smarter than you. Listen to people. And this is the challenge, is that people think that those, in order to be a thought leader, you need to get schooled by other thought leaders, or you need to only talk up, I suppose, in terms of a hierarchy. The most I learned from this industry, and I was fresh to it when I came to it, is from a guy that we employ called Matt Saraceni. And he is a true thought leader. He is amazing. And you need to be humble. You need to ask the questions, as embarrassing as they are when you first get going. And you need to never stop asking questions from anyone else around you.
Yeah,
and then be honest, like, take the information that you've got, digest it. And if you feel that something is untrue, then call it as untrue. And if you think you can see it going in a different direction, do it. And if you do it in a humble enough way, and if you do it in a way that is, you know, arrogant, and that's thought leadership. That's when people want to ask you more questions about it, because it's a conversation and not a lecture.
Yeah, that's great advice. And podcasting's one way to do that. I always come off these podcasts thinking that I've learned an awful lot, as I have today, and also that, you know, it's almost been like a personal masterclass. So where can people reach out to you and say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Sure. I'm always contactable. There's a press page at Omni Studio that has all of my details. But yeah, flick me an email, get me on LinkedIn, Sharon Taylor. There's a lot of us, but hopefully you find me. or email me, sharon@omnistudio.com. I'm always happy to have a chat, a coffee, a beer, anything really.
All right. I'll post links to all of those in the show notes as well, so that people can have them easily and they'll know which Sharon Taylor on LinkedIn that they should look up. All right. So finally, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
That's a great question. Who would I ask you to interview? Gosh, how many can I do? Multiples? Do I have to pick?
Oh, absolutely,
one?
Yeah.
Okay. So, if you can get him, Clive Dickens is amazing at what he does in terms of digital media. He is the chief digital officer at Seven West Media at the moment. He's phenomenal. If you want audio only, Vijay Solanki, who is the CEO of IAB Australia, is amazing. From a business point of view, I mean, if you want stories of startups, there are so many around the traps that I could give you. Alistair Michener over at Drawboard is doing some pretty crazy things. I'll stop there. I'll just keep going otherwise.
All right.
I'm sorry, it's not a more coherent single answer.
Well, that's all right. We'll go looking for those folks. So Clive, Vijay and Alistair, look out for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Sharon Taylor at Omni Studio.
Fantastic.
So Sharon, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today and your insights. I know you're really busy and I appreciate you taking time out to come on the show. I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot and I wish you all the best for Omni Studio. And I know we're going to keep in touch. I know we're seeing one another soon.
Correct.
For a coffee, and then and I'll continue to be using Omni Studio, obviously.
Thank you. I'm really glad. And thanks so much for the time. And everyone listening, thank you for listening to me waffle on about things that I find interesting for the last little while.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Sharon.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jürgen.
I really enjoyed talking to Sharon and learning more about Omni Studio and the things that lie in the future for podcasting. I hope you too were inspired and learned from Sharon. All the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/Omni Studio. That is OMNYSTUDIO. All lowercase, all one word, OMNYSTUDIO. innovabiz.com.au/Omni Studio. That will have all the show notes as well as the contact information for Sharon. Now, before I go on to our suggested guests that Sharon had for me, I want to remind our listeners about the challenge from episode 63 with James Eder. There are only 7 days remaining. So every day, remember what the challenge was? Every day you should speak to one, at least one stranger, complete stranger. Of course, not in a creepy way. The idea is to actually connect with more people, and who knows what this might lead to. New business, new relationships, new opportunities. Go up to someone, and while waiting in line or in an elevator or at lunch, or when you're at work, just go up and say, "Hey, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the person on the other end from London said I should just go and speak to one new person every day. So would you mind if I spoke to you?" As James said in the interview, that will open up doors and opportunities. It's about just getting out there, being brave and just breaking the ice and see where it goes. Introduce yourself and ask, is there something you can help them with today? I've been doing that nearly every day, not perfect, but nearly every day, and it does open up some interesting conversations. So this week, I've met a national road cycle champion and a military pilot. So there you go. Now, to be eligible for our prize, you need to post on Facebook and Twitter, "Spoke to another stranger today," with the hashtag new connections and anything else you want to add. Then report back in the comments below the blog for episode 63 on your experiences. So for the best experience, we'll have an awesome prize. Stay tuned for that in the next podcast episode. But of course, you're already winning by simply connecting with new people. So back to Sharon. She suggested three people for me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast, a bonus. Clive Dickens, the Chief Digital Officer at Seven West Media, Vijay Solanki, CEO of IAB Australia, and Alastair Michener, Founder and CEO at Drawboard. So we'll be busily sending out invitations. So Clive, Vijay, and Alastair, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from me to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Sharon Taylor from Omni Studio. Thank you for listening all the way to the end. If you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts so you'll never miss a future episode. While you're there, you might leave us a review just to let us know how we're doing. If there's anything you'd like us to cover or questions you want answered or even a guest that you'd like us to invite and get on a future Innova Buzz podcast, please send those suggestions to us. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from Innova Biz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.